Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Sebelius, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week in the United States, more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, economics, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the abomination of desolation right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Think about that. It's pretty obvious today that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the last 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. And let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. 22 principles of that law in our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties for the violation of those laws and the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty of a law is to suffer its effect. So whether you call it the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, free of charge, and you can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org, click on the email, send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the abomination of desolation. A treatise written by a fellow by the name of R. Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, wrote this evidently about 1995. I got it, I don't know, a year or two ago. Sat here on top of a pile of books for a long, long time, and then one day I picked it up and I said, well, what's this? Let me look at it. It's in a binder. Whoever gave this to me put it in a binder for me. A little one-inch binder, and it's about 100 pages long. And he used a unique process. He used the scientific method by building a model and then put the historical facts next to his theory that the abomination of desolation was the Dome of the Rock. And I thought, well, let me share that with you. You can figure out for yourself after you listen to this information whether or not you think it is. I'm not here to tell you what to think. I'm just here to give you the report. I thought it was a pretty good report. I think the guy's probably right. Probably right. And he says the 1,335 days will be up in 2007. So let's keep our eyes open for 2007, and let's see if the Jews start building that temple about the year 2007. That ought to stir up a lot of hate and discontent now, shouldn't it? Now, some frequently asked questions, Wright goes on to say, and he said, what relationships are permitted with Jews and Christians? And he says the answer is none. The Quran states that it is not permitted to have a Jew or a Christian as a friend. Now, you know, we Americans have welcomed 7 million of these Muslims into the United States. And, you know, our God told us not to do that. That's right. You know, God is the promoter of segregation. Our political institutions have told us that segregation is akin to discrimination, and discrimination is racism, and we don't want to do that. So we're going to open our borders, and we're going to let every race and ethnic group and nationality around the world come to the United States. Now, we Americans, we white Anglo-Saxons, we Israelites, in 1960 comprised 90% of the population. Today, it's 68% and dropping rapidly. 68% of the population is white, and 32% is all others. That's a third now. That's a third. More than enough to constitute a majority, because you can't get all of the whites, you know, to constitute a majority. But you can take all of those other groups from around the world, the Vietnamese, the Cambodians, the Indians, the Pakistanis, you know, all these various groups and organizations, and they're going to take political control of the United States. And these 7 million Muslims over here cannot live with us. They cannot live with us. They can dominate us. They can control us. but they can never live with us. And that's the problem that the Jews have over in Israel. They can never live with the Palestinians. Not because the Jews couldn't live with the Palestinians can't live with the Jews. And here's why. Here's why. You see, the Quran says, take neither the Jews nor the Christians for your friends. They are friends with one another. Whoever of the seeds, whoever of you seeks their friendship shall become one of their number. That's reported in the Quran, 551 of the table. Remember, it had 114 parts to it. This is one of those 114 parts. In Islam, Jews are lower than Christians because they rejected Jesus as Messiah. Christians are lower than Muslims because although they understood Jesus was sent by God as the Messiah, they deified Jesus, making it necessary for God to send a new prophet, Muhammad, who seeks the position as the greatest of all prophets. A common theme in the Quran is believers obey Allah and obey the Apostle. It is on this basis that the hadiths carry so much weight, since they contain the words of Muhammad, who according to himself is the most important man that has ever lived. Many people are aware that killing infidels, or those whose beliefs are different from Islam, is justified in Islam. But the overall commandment on killing is broad enough to allow killing even those that Allah has told you not to kill. If you can justify it, which is as simple as saying it is for the good of Islam, you can kill somebody. Now that's the opposite of the Hebrews 10 commandments, which says, thou shalt do no murder. Now, the Quran says, you shall not kill any man that Allah has forbidden you to kill, except for a just cause. So if Allah has forbidden you to kill a fellow Muslim and you need to kill him for a just cause, I guess that's the rational basis for these suicide bombers in Iraq to run around killing Iraqis. I mean, they kill about 100 Iraqis every day. They kill about one American every day, but they're killing about 100 Iraqis. And I guess they can justify killing their fellow Muslim Iraqis. Now, the God of the Scriptures, the God of Abraham, has not given us permission to kill anybody, which is another problem for us being in Iraq in the first place. We never had any authority to go over there by our God. The God of Abraham never gave us any authority to go over to Iraq and start killing Iraqis. And that's why we're having such a problem over in Iraq. Now, we don't have nearly the problem that we're having in Iraq over in Afghanistan. Self-defense is a vital principle of law. When somebody attacks you, you got a right to defend yourself. But the Iraqis didn't attack us. The Afghanis did. So because of that, we've had a better go of it in Afghanistan than we have here. The question arises, well, now that we've defeated the Taliban or the Al-Qaeda people in Afghanistan, why are we staying there? You know, it's one thing to get attacked, and you go over there, and you kick butt, and then you leave. You know, that's the logical thing to do. But for some reason, we Americans have decided we want to stay on. We have military garrisons in 200 countries around the world. I think that's the last number I saw, 200 countries. Well, that's all the countries there are in the world. Now, why do we need American service personnel in Canada and Australia and New Zealand? Why do we have American military personnel in Israel and all over the Middle East, all over Europe? You know, stop and think about it. And they see us as an occupying power. So part of the problem we bring on ourselves. Now, if you'll notice, the Swedes aren't having nearly the problem that the Americans and Britons are having. And you Britons over there, you invited all those Muslims into your country. And look at the results that you get from it. So if you think segregation is so bad and integration is so good, there was a time in England when you didn't have all those Muslims there. You didn't have all these foreigners from all around the world, all around the empire, living in your midst, in your country. Now take a look at the Japanese. The Japanese have reserved Japan for the Japanese. Americans can go and visit, but make sure you leave. I imagine anybody in the world with the money can travel to Japan, look around, and then leave. They don't have an open immigration policy. You don't have a million Muslims running around the streets of Tokyo. You have Japanese in Japan, and you don't have a problem with all of this ethnic and racial and religious violence that we Americans are experiencing, or the Jews are experiencing. And that's because when God told us, when God separated us at the Tower of Babel, and he gave us our inheritance, gave the blacks Africa, and he gave Asia to the Asians, and gave Europe to the Anglo-Saxons, you know, there was a pecking order. There is an inheritance. And if we would stay in our inheritance and mind our business and leave those Muslims alone, let the Muslims do what Muslims do best. They can oppress their people. They can kill each other and do all those things that Muslims want to do. And it doesn't affect us in Australia. It doesn't affect us here in New Zealand or Great Britain. But when we invite these people into our midst, they themselves, you know, we Americans don't have a problem living with the Muslims. It's the Muslims that cannot live with us. They have to dominate us. It's their religion. They have to subject us to their Muslim theology. Now, if you want to convert to Muslim theology, you don't have a problem. But if you don't want to, then they have to kill you. And that's the problem that the Jews have. Now, when God took over the Promised Land after he led our people out of Egypt, he did not accommodate the Philistines and the Jebusites and the Hittites and everybody else. He destroyed them and threw them out of the land. The only solution for the Jews is to throw all of the Palestinians out of your land. You know, we're the people, the white Anglo-Saxons, that are the biggest problems, or create the biggest problems for ourselves. We brought all those black Africans over here to the United States. Boys and girls, those black Africans did not come over here and invade North America. We went over to Africa and bought those people and brought them over here as slaves. So you can't very well complain, you know, that the blacks here in America are a problem. We created it ourselves. We are, in law, the proximate cause of our own injury. And this invasion of 2,000 or 3,000 Mexicans a day coming into the United States, that's not good for our side. It's good for their side. I don't deny that. It's not good for our side. And Mexico is a good place for Mexicans, and they ought to live in their inheritance, and we ought to live in our inheritance and then leave those people alone. But it's our interventionist politics and our interventionist economics that has caused most of our problems. And the root is the violation of this principle of segregation. Now, you know, I'm not going to change anything. I'm just here as a reporter to tell you, you know, you brought this upon yourselves, and now you're going to suffer for it. This is the penalty that we Americans, Britons, and so on, are paying for the violation of that law. So you might as well understand it. You decided that God's principles, God's laws concerning segregation and race relations was wrong, and you wanted to fix it. Okay, well, now you fixed it with integration. So now live with the consequences that come from it. Now, the rest of us need to understand that relationships are also affected due to the understanding that Allah is not the biblical God of Abraham, and therefore the followers of Allah are not God's people, and they do not adhere to God's ways. Only with the Jews dead can the Muslims continue believing the deception that they have access to God without questioning it amongst themselves. Since the Jewish lamp was rekindled in Israel in 1948, more division has occurred among the already divided Arabs. The Arabs have not realized that killing the Jews has caused the Jews to become united. And as the terrorist nature of Islam progresses, the result is that Islam has become more fractious and Israel more united. The Arab Muslims, by believing that Jews must be killed, have caused the Jews to become even more powerful while fracturing themselves, which in turn increases the volatility of the tension between them. Now, if Mecca and Medina are the strongholds of Islam, this is another question here, if Mecca and Medina are the strongholds of Islam today, why is Islam so intent upon acquiring Israel? You think about it. Israel, I don't know how big that place is, but I doubt if it's over 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 square miles. If you take the amount of money that's been spent fighting wars and dinking around over there over that piece of real estate, you could have taken the same amount of money. I'll bet you could have paid every Arab in Palestine $1 million and told him, hey, take $1 million and go live anywhere you want. And probably still have money left over. So after 50 years, you're still fighting and arguing over this piece of real estate over here. And you will be fighting over that piece of real estate until the second coming. And here's why. It's because the reason is that the Middle East was completely under Muslim domination, including the land of Israel, since 638 AD. They want it back in accordance with their belief that no land given over to Islam can ever return to a non-Islamic status. In other words, the Muslims just have one fundamental motivation, and that is all of the land in the world that we want is the land next to ours. That's all they want. All the land that we want is the land next to ours. So if you take a look at it, they tried to take over Europe, you know, during the Middle Ages. They actually had incursions into what we call Yugoslavia today, Albania, and a lot of southern Europe now is Muslim. And Spain was in the hands of the Muslims until they were driven out in the Middle Ages. And they want to take it back. And that's their intent. And there's going to be war. There's going to be jihad. There's going to be a fight from now on. Now, the logical thing to do is to simply draw the line. You know, the Turks want to join the common market. Well, I don't blame them. If I was a Turk, I'd want to join the common market too. Why do you people in Europe want to bring those Muslims into your midst? How's that going to benefit you? Is there anything in Turkey that you can't buy? Is there anything in Turkey that they won't sell to? You know, don't let me get in the way of the happiness and success of you Europeans, but pay attention now. And they're going to join the European common market if they possibly can, and they're going to continue their relentless march to take over Europe. And you've brought in millions of them into France and Germany and England. You have a Trojan horse in your midst, you European. You decided that the segregation policies that God gave us at the Tower of Babel were wrong. And so you brought all of those people into your midst. Now, there's a prophecy that concerns you, and it's in Deuteronomy chapter 28. So let's flip over there. Let me show you something. Deuteronomy 28, about verse 45, I believe it is. And he says, moreover, all of these curses shall come upon you, and shall pursue you and overtake you until you be destroyed, because you hearkened not unto the voice of the Eternal your God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. And they shall be upon you for a sign and a wonder, and upon your seed forever, because you serve not the eternal your God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. Therefore shall you serve your enemies, which the eternal shall send against you in hunger and in thirst and in nakedness and in want of all things, and he shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck until he has destroyed you. And the Lord your God shall bring a nation against you from far, from the ends of the earth, as swift as the eagle flies, a nation whose tongue you shall not understand, a nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young, and shall eat the fruit of your cattle, the fruit of your land, until you be destroyed, which also shall not leave you either corn, wine, or oil, or the increase of your kine, or the flocks of your sheep, until he has destroyed you. You know, we Americans and Britons and West Europeans in general, you know, have always held an open hand out and said, hey, listen, how can we help you? Take a look at when people are starving to death in Ethiopia or Nigeria or Biafra, where does the food aid come from? Did you see the Japanese jumping up and down saying, gosh, let's run over there and help these people? Or do you see the Afghanis or the Iraqis or the Saudi Arabians running out here with food aid? Isn't it always the Americans and the Britons and the Australians and the New Zealanders and the Europeans, the Canadians, that are sending missionaries and sending all these do-gooders out all over the world here, you know, trying to save everybody? Well, keep in mind that the Muslims over here cannot live with you Christians. They have to dominate you. They cannot live with you Jews. They have to dominate you, and if they can't, then they're going to have to destroy you. And they don't have any qualms about killing people. None. They don't even mind killing their own, as you can see in Iraq. They're running around killing each other. So another reason is that the land has been declared holy by God. Now, if Mecca and Medina are the strongholds of Islam today, why is Islam so intent on acquiring Israel? Well, another reason is that the land has been declared holy by God. The God of Abraham called that the Holy Land. Who has never made any such declaration about Medina or Mecca? Now, acquiring this land permanently would be tantamount to saying that their God is the real God. Whatever forces are involved with Islam, it is clear that they want to oust the God of Abraham from Israel and replace it with another God. They want to replace the God of Abraham with Allah, with Satan. And they're going to work at that until they either succeed at it or they're destroyed. You know, we had the same problem when we left Egypt and we came into the land of promise, the promised land, as it was called. And Joshua was leading us. And every time they had a war, God instructed Joshua and the Israelites to destroy them and drive them out. And he said, don't make any covenants, don't make any contracts with those people. And what did we do? Well, we went right out and made treaties and contracts with those people. That's what a treaty is, a contract. It's an agreement. Remember, the Christians made this contract, this agreement with Omar? It's against the law to do that. There's four statutes in the scripture that tell us not to make any contracts with these foreign and alien gods. And we just can't wait to go out and make a NATO treaty or a Southeast Asia treaty or this or that treaty with all the nations of the world. We just can't wait to go down and sign contracts with the state and get our marriage licenses and driver's licenses and birth certificates and just wallow in this idolatry. But it has a penalty, and it comes back to bite us. Here's another question. Is Islam a religion of peace? The answer, no. However, the practice of Islam in most regions of the world is peaceful because most Muslims are peaceful. This is due to the fact that most Muslims have not read the Quran, nor have they studied the Hadith. And since they do not know the contents of the Quran at a doctrinal level, they do not follow it. So when a Muslim becomes a devout Muslim by studying the Quran, they become exposed to the hateful and violent nature of the doctrines of their faith, and it becomes quite easy to engage in terrorist acts with the words of Allah on your lips. By contrast, it can be said that most Christians do not read their Bibles either, and most Christians are peaceful. But in Christianity, the doctrines are preaching a religion of love, not hate. And when a Christian becomes more devout by studying the Bible, they become exposed to the teachings of the loving nature of the doctrines of their faith, and it is impossible to engage in terrorism with the words of Jesus on your lips. Now, how many radical Muslims are there? Well, we don't know, but estimates run from 10 to 20%, but it could be even higher than that. Now, think about that. If only 10% of 1.3 billion Muslims are radical, that would mean that there are 130 million radical Muslims running around the world, which would be roughly the same number as the adult population of the United States. Now, that's a bunch. Now, there's no way that we can deal with 100 million or 50 million or, hell, even 25 million of these radical Muslims strapping bombs on themselves, especially since you have invited them into the midst of your nation. I mean, they've got thousands of mosques all over America. That won't happen in Japan. You know, if you had a Muslim running up and down the streets of Tokyo, you know, right away, you know, you could recognize that that guy's not Japanese. I'm going to watch him. How are you going to watch all these Muslims in the United States? You know, the Muslims, as I said before, you know, have a right to life. They have a right to their religion. They have a right to choose. They have a right to their piece of real estate. It's we, the Anglo-Saxons, that went over there and stole their oil. We're over there stealing their oil. We're over there making contracts and deals with them and treaties. We're inviting them over here to our country and letting them take over. we're submitting to their type of rule, their type of politics, their type of religion. Well, if you want to do that, we'll get with it. But then don't be surprised when you have these bombing attacks or you have these terrorist attacks, because that's their religion. That's what they tell you in their Quran. That's what they're telling you they're going to do. So they're not hiding it. They're right out in the front. But, you know, most Muslims are just like most Christians. Most Catholics, they don't know much about Catholicism, but they're devout Catholics. And most Christians are devout Christians, but they don't know much about the Bible. And Muslims, and I'm sure that all the rest of the religious people in the world are just about the same. Very devout, very sincere, nice people, but they don't know much about their own religious ideology. Now, 130 million of those suckers running around the world is going to produce a lot of hate and discontent. So get used to it. More is coming. Why are revisionist revisionist historians becoming so prevalent? Let's see if I can spit that out again. Why is it that revisionist historians are becoming so prevalent today? Well, in the past, historical information was not so easily available, but now with the information age and the media ability to reach the general public, the media is being manipulated to present a historical picture that hides the truth. Islamic history is dripping in blood, and that kind of testimony does not sit well with the modern world. So if you come out here and you say, well, let me tell you what's going on with the Muslims and with Islam. Well, that's about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. Nobody wants to hear that. We want to hear nice things. We want you to preach smooth things, preach deceits. We don't want you to tell us what's really going on out there or what the cause and effect relationship is. Will God destroy the Dome of the Rock? Well, Scripture does not address destroying the abomination of desolation structure directly, although that seems reasonable. But it does say that God will pour out his judgment on those responsible for it. That's this period of time coming, that's called the Great Tribulation coming up. At some point in time, there is going to be a time that is going to be so fractious that Jesus himself said there's never been a time like it in the past and there'll never be a time like it in the future. Now, I can only think of Noah's flood as being something that would be akin to this, and he said it's going to be worse than Noah's flood. How on earth you can get something worse than Noah's flood that kills everybody but 8 people in the world, I don't know. But I'm just telling you that the boss said this thing is going to get tough. Now, I've brought a program or two on here and said, you know, I think it's time for us to start thinking about getting ready for this, don't you? About time for us to start buckling down here and paying attention. And I got the story in Matthew 25 about the 10 virgins. You got to read that story. It's a pretty interesting story. There's 10 virgins. 5 of them are wise, and they're prepared for the second coming. 5 are foolish, and they're not. I guess the 5 that are foolish can't see that there's any problem out there, and the 5 that are wise can see the problem. So when the problem finally comes, as the second coming occurs, the 5 without oil in their lamps come to the 5 that have the oil and say, sell us some oil. And the 5 that have the oil say, well, no, we're not going to sell to you. I've likened that to famine. You know, famine's coming here in the United States. Get ready for it. We've never had it here, so nobody can believe it. Nobody can conceive of it. I'm just telling you that that's what God's been telling us here in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. Some of the penalties that come upon us are famine. And you need to prepare for that. But, you know, people don't want to prepare for famine. We've never had it before. Well, you're only going to prepare for it once. I mean, you only starve to death once. You know, famine isn't something that comes, you know, once a month, you know, like a woman's cycle. It isn't something that you prepare for month after month or year after year. It only occurs once. There's only been one Noah's flood. It only happens once. You don't need to prepare for another Noah's flood. You do need to prepare for a great tribulation. It hasn't happened yet. God says he's going to bring it upon us. Seems like to me, if one of the penalties that comes upon us in this great tribulation is famine, that you ought to be prepared for it. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder, and we'll be back with some more of these questions and answers about the Muslim Dome of the Rock and this Muslim theology. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. You're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy, procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct 417-273-4967 and order it. The number again, 417-273-4967. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs, by the way, are archived on the Internet by title and date. If you want to go back and review some of these programs, just go download them and you can have them free. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website. Now, remember, we're trying to find this guy named R. Wright, who wrote this treatise. And I'd like to see the other three, if I could. So if you have these other three, why don't you call me or send me an email and tell me what the terms and conditions are. And if you know this fellow R. Wright, why don't you tell him I'd like to talk to him? Give me his name, address, his email, telephone number, something like that. He wrote this about 1995, he says, in the treatise itself. And it was published on the Internet, although I looked all over the Internet, we couldn't find it anywhere. So if it's out there and you know where it's at, well, clue me in, would you? Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. Remember, the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed are going to recommend the Law Hour or Editorial Review. They're not necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, they're racial or ethnic partisans. And their viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, just go to the website georgegordon.org or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the abomination of desolation. Last section here in this treatise written by Mr. R. Wright. And ask another question here. What should be our response? You know, before we do anything, we need to get our lives, our own lives in order. The place and place ourselves in the right position with our God, the God of Abraham. Then we can reach out to others and help them. We should be helping those who are locked into this spiritual prison called Islam and help them understand the truth. For many of the Islamic people, there are immediate and pressing needs that must be dealt with, and we can demonstrate the love of our God, the God of Abraham, and to keep his ways and his laws. We should feed their hungry, clothe their poor, take care of their sick, and demonstrate the love of God through the way in which we live. The short answer to the question of how we should respond to the Muslims is to love them and care for them enough to tell them the truth. If they reject the message that we bring, so be it. But we still must love them, care for their sick, clothe the poor, feed the hungry, and in that way they will have experienced a different form of worship, one that comes from the God of Abraham, and for many of them, it may be the first time they've ever experienced it. Heaven forbid that we should respond the way Muhammad did when he killed those who had a different belief and would not submit to him. Do you ever notice that religious people are that way? I mean, it's not just the Muslims. Take a look at the Catholics and the Protestants in Ireland. Do you notice how they deal with one another? They kill each other. When religious people get excited, they run around killing people. Catholics did that in the Middle Ages. They were out here. They're so concerned about the health and safety and welfare of the Protestants, they were burning them in barns and killing them to save them. They want to save these people. And they're really concerned about what you believe. Muslims are just like the Catholics. They're really concerned about what you believe. Now, if you believe that the flood, Noah's flood, was local instead of worldwide, well, then I guess I need to come out and kill you because you don't believe the way I believe. Or I believe the flood was worldwide, so I guess all you local flood theorists out there need to come and kill me because I don't believe the way you do. You ever notice that? It's not actions. I mean, you can have a guy out here screwing some guy's wife, committing adultery. That doesn't bother him. God can forgive that. But if you believe something different than I believe, then we have to kill you. Now, that's the religious reaction to people's beliefs. And these Muslims aren't any different. They can't live and let live. They can't live their lives and believe what they want to believe and do their thing and let you Christians and you Jews do the same thing. They have to go out and kill you. Now, I'm sitting here saying, well, I don't care what those Jews believe. Let the Jews do their thing. Leave them alone. Butt out. But you'll find that that's the way religious people are. Religious people are dangerous people. Boy, the last thing I want around me is some guy that's religious. They just scare the living bejesus right out of me. I've been paying attention to history, and well, I can see how these religious people deal with one another. Those Muslims are scary people, real scary. But then so are the Catholics and the Protestants and the Jews. They just scare the living hell out of me, too. But, you know, they're around, and you got to live with them whether you like it or not. Now, the God of Abraham made us a neat promise. He said, I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries if you obey me and keep my commandments. And so I work hard to obey God and keep his commandments, and I want to see if I can't get Big Mike on my side to protect me from all of these religious people around me. Should Jews or Christians worship Allah or the Quran? Well, that's a question you got to answer for yourself, isn't it? But I would say no. Prior to Islam, in the religion of the Arabs, before Muhammad came along, you know, the Arabs had religion. Allah, in Arabic for Allah, or Aramaic, the God, both referred to a specific astral deity associated with the moon and the Quraysh tribe believing it was the moon god, one of many in the pantheon of gods. Additionally, Jesus spoke Aramaic and when asked how to pray, said to pray to our Father who is in heaven. He did not say to pray to Allah or Allaha, even though the word existed as the God in the language of the people with which he spoke. Now, after Islam, Muhammad became the most important man in the world, according to himself, since he brought the words of Allah. Yet it was then, and still is, necessary to believe Muhammad first before coming to Allah, making Allah the God of Muhammad, to whom you must come before acknowledging Allah and Islam. Muhammad himself stated that this was necessary. He said, you must love him more than your mother and father and all of mankind first before coming to Allah. And this is true. In the Quran, there are no miracles. The heavens do not open up. The Red Sea doesn't part. Nobody is ever healed. All that is known about Islam is from Muhammad's lips. If you don't trust Muhammad to be telling the truth and have faith and confidence in Muhammad, there is no possibility that you could believe in Allah, since everything known about Allah is from Muhammad only. Hence, you must first become a follower of Muhammad before you can become a follower of Allah, the God of Muhammad. It is well documented in the Quran that Jews and Christians rejected Muhammad and his message of Islam. Most Western people today do not believe that Muhammad had visions and see Muhammad as simply developing a new belief system, and therefore Muslims are Muhammadians. Muslims disdain the term Muhammadans because, although they must be followers of Muhammad first, they hold that Allah is their God, not Muhammad. In any case, the Jews and the Christians of the period soundly rejected Muhammad and his God Allah, who can only be approached after becoming submissive to Muhammad, something that neither observant Jews or Christians of the period would ever do. Here again, it's a religious ideology, a fanaticism. Mormons do that. You know, they believe in Joseph Smith. They have their ideology. And they're certainly welcome to it. But they're not running around killing people, at least last I heard, you know. They weren't running around killing people because they didn't believe it. I have Mormons come to school here every once in a while, and I probably have a collection of the Book of Mormon second only to the Mormon Church. I must have 10 Books of Mormon here. Mormon books. Seems like they all want to convert me to Mormonism. And so far I've resisted, at least for the last 30 or 40 years. And they're good folks, and I'm not opposed to all of you Mormons out there. I mean, you're certainly entitled to your religious ideology. Just let me go to hell by myself, would you? Quit trying to save me. Just leave me alone. Let me do my thing. I'm out here obeying God and trying to keep his commandments, and I'm doing what I think is right. And in the final analysis, God will come to me and say, you know, Gordon, because you didn't join Muhammad and the Islamic religion, I'm going to throw you into hell. Well, then I'm the proximate cause of my own injury, am I not? And you Muslims out there, if your God is so powerful, why don't you let your God kill me? This is a wild new concept. Don't you kill me. Don't you do anything to me. What you do is go pray to Allah and tell Allah that I'm a dirty infidel and that Allah needs to kill me. And if your God is God, then he'll come down and kill me, won't he? Without any help from you whatsoever. And let me tell you that the God of Abraham does not need any help from George Gordon. I don't have to go out and kill anybody. I don't have to go out here and kill sodomites because I disagree with their lifestyle. The sodomites will be taken care of naturally and normally. The God of Abraham is fully capable of dealing with his own enemies all by himself. The God of Abraham can kill Egyptians by the tens of thousands in the Red Sea all by himself. He didn't need any help from us at all. None. Zero. Zilch. That's why I kind of like this God of Abraham. He doesn't require that I go out and kill anybody. I don't have to go out here and preach to anybody. I don't have to get people to give their heart to Jesus, to get them saved. I don't have to knock on anybody's door and give them a tract and say, do you know Jesus? He can take care of that himself. If he wants you converted, he'll convert you. I don't need to do it. And I don't need to go out here and kill people or maim them or go out and argue with them. In fact, that's why I've been saying, you know, to everybody that wants to listen. You know, if we'd stop stealing those Arabs' oil over there, and if we would butt out and leave those people alone, we'd have a whole lot more peace and stability and a whole lot less problems. If we, instead of having 2, 3, 4 million American troops stationed in 200 countries around the world, just brought all of our people home and went to work over here and did our thing with our own inheritance, I think we'd be a whole lot better off, a whole lot more prosperous in the process, and we'd have a lot more peace, stability, tranquility, and a whole lot less problem, which is what our God told us to start with. He said, you know, just butt out, leave those people alone, and things will go a lot better for you. But we decided that our God had made a mistake, and we have to fix his mistakes, and we're constantly out doing it. And that's why we're over there in Iran right now, in Iraq, and not Iran, but in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're trying to fix God's mistakes. We're going to make the world safe for democracy. I don't know what in the world ever made us think that God was a Democrat. I thought God was a king. I thought he was a despot. I thought he was a dictator. Everything that I've read in the scripture indicates to me that God is a king. God is a dictator. God makes laws and kills people when they don't follow his laws. I didn't see any room for a compromise over the Ten Commandments. It's you either do this or die. That's the way I understood it. Somehow or another, we got to run around making the world safe for democracy. I can't for the life of me figure out why. Now he asks this question, why do Bibles contain the word Philistina in them? Well, the word Philistina is now appearing in some Bibles for the land of Canaan. The Latin word did not even enter the scene historically until 135 AD when the Romans changed the name of Israel to Palestine. Now, English for the Latin word Philistina, and it remained Palestine until 1948 when control passed to the Jews, who renamed it Israel. Now, many Arabs still call Israel Palestine, or the occupied territories of Palestine. Since Islamic interests now control large Bible publishing houses, there are Bibles that say Philistina in them. And there are many ways to advance Islam, and by providing Bibles that introduce Islamic concepts and names is one of them. It should best be viewed as deception. It's kind of like the communists. Well, Chucks, it's the same thing. You know, propaganda is a very valuable tool. Napoleon said that he feared newspapers more than he feared standing armies. And we do this with television. You know, here in America, 50 years ago, sodomy was filth, depravity. It was dirty. It was unscriptural. It was unbiblical, and nobody wanted anything to do with it. So to give you an illustration of how this can be done, what you do is you create a sitcom like Three's Company. And you introduce these concepts in humor. And then pretty soon, you know, after 30, 40 years, the entire society accepts sodomy as being a normal part of life. There's been a transformation in my lifetime from something that was wicked and evil to something that is righteous and good in 50 years. And the communists were good at that. Propaganda. They have infected the entire world with socialist ideology. We Americans practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto today. 100 years ago, we didn't practice any of them. So in 100 years, the communists have converted Americans, Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, and Western Europeans to socialism and communism. We have not converted any of those socialists to the Ten Commandments. In fact, we have repudiated the Ten Commandments, and we have adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Well, the Muslims are just doing the same thing. They're using the same forms of propaganda, the same techniques against us that the communists have used. The Catholics have done it for years. It's a very common practice. We use it in sales. Madison Avenue uses it constantly. And in the Bible, it's called the white horse of Revelation 6. That white horse is deception, lying, deceiving. And deception is a methodology whereby we can destroy you. And the reason for this is that God has a covenant or a contract with those of us that are under the contract or under the covenant. That contract was negotiated by Moses about 84 generations ago. 84 times 40, about 3,000 years ago. And under the terms of that contract, God said, I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries if you obey me, keep my commandments. If you don't obey me, keep my commandments, I will destroy you from off the land. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, for them it was the kiss of death. The war was over on December 7th, 1941. That was the opening round, and it was the death knell of Japan, as they knew it, by attacking the United States. And that's because when they attacked the United States, they invoked and triggered Exodus 23, 20 through 24. They invoked that protection by the God of Abraham in our behalf. It was all over for them. Now, the only way that you can destroy an Israelite is to get the Israelite to disobey God. And that's what these Muslims are doing. If the Muslims can get us to violate the law of our God, the God of Abraham, our God will destroy us. And he has promised to do just that. Let me show you something here. It's over in Leviticus 26. Leviticus chapter 26, about verse 30 or something like that. Let's see if I can find it here for you, and I'll show you something. Leviticus 26. And about verse 32, he says, I'll bring the land into desolation, and your enemies which dwell therein shall be astonished at it. These Muslims, when they see our nation destroyed, are going to be astonished. And I'll scatter you among the heathen, and I'll draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be desolate, and your cities made waste. Then shall the land enjoy your Sabbaths, as long as it lies desolate, and it be in your enemy's land, or you be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy your Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you dwelt upon it. Because we will not practice the land Sabbaths and the Jubilees, because we violate that law, God is going to destroy us from off the land. We're going into national captivity, boys and girls. It's a part of the penalties that we get out of this great tribulation. Now, if we obey God and keep his commandments, then he'll be an enemy to our enemies and an adversary to our adversaries. I don't need any protection, Mr. Bush, from the Arab terrorists. I got all the protection that I need from Big Mike. What I need is for George Bush to get out of my life and quit interfering with my rights, privileges, and immunities. I don't need the Patriot Act, and I don't need Homeland Security. Now, I'm not speaking for all Americans, because most Americans do not obey God and do not keep his commandments. They probably need the Patriot Act. I don't doubt that most Americans need Homeland Security to protect them from these Muslim terrorists. But George Gordon doesn't need it. So I'd like to advocate this principle of law here from Leviticus 26. Obey God and keep his commandments. Now, I told you that in the first 13 or 14 verses here. He said, now, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I'll give you these benefits. This is in Leviticus 26, verse 3 through 13. You obey me, keep my commandments. I'm going to do all these things for you. He said, 5 of you will chase 100. 100 of you will put 10,000 to flight. Your enemy shall be afraid of you and shall fall before you by the sword. Then he goes on to say in verse 14, he says, "But now if you won't hearken unto me, and if you won't do all of my commandments, and if you despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgment, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but that you break my covenant, you violate the terms and conditions of our agreement here." Pilgrim, hey pilgrim, you paying attention? You violate my commandments, and I'm going to have a bitch with you, and here's what I'm going to do to you. Now the rest of Leviticus 26 says, here's what I'm going to do to you. The personal pronoun I appears here 20 times. 20 times. Don't get mad at the Muslims and the Arabs. Don't get mad at the communists and the bankers. Don't get mad at the Republicans and the Democrats. The guy that you got a bitch with is God Almighty himself. Now, these Muslims over here are mean dudes, and they're causing us a problem. But, you know, God said to us, I will make your enemies to be at peace with you. You obey me and keep my commandments. That's why I'm a strong advocate for the Ten Commandments. I think we should abandon the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. You know that plank in the Communist Manifesto that advocates free education for all children in public school? I think we should abandon public schools and go back to homeschool, where we belong. You know that plank in the Communist Manifesto that calls for a progressive income tax, the second one? I think we should abandon that second plank to the Communist Manifesto and this progressive income tax and go back to tithing and property instead of profit and income. You know that fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto that calls for a central bank, you know, the Federal Reserve System? I think we should abandon Federal Reserve notes and the Federal Reserve System and go back to gold and silver coin and just weights and balances. And, you know, each and every one of us as individuals can practice every one of these laws of God right now in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Western Europe. We can do that right now, today. We don't have to practice communism. We do that because we choose to. Now, we're not going to reverse out this curse of the Muslim invasion or the Mexican invasion coming into the United States. But the God of Abraham will protect you from it. And in Daniel, he made this observation. He says, those that are written in the Lamb's Book of Life are those that are going to be protected from it. I'd like to have my name written there. Whether it is or not, that's another story for another date, another time. All right, there's the story on the abomination of desolation. I think this guy pretty well hit the nail on the head. Remember, his name is R. Wright. If you know who this guy is, let me know, would you? It's called The Abomination of Desolation, an Exegetical Report by Mr. R. Wright. I think he did a pretty good job. I liked it. Brought it to you for that reason. All right, with that then, let me give you our final reminder. We'll be back again tomorrow night, same time, same station, with a new topic, and we'll remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call The Law School direct, 417-273-4967. For that free introductory CD package, 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Hey, time's up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.